Welcome to the Penis Project podcast, connecting men through science, stories, solutions, but most of all, through support. This podcast was founded by myself and Dr. Joe Milios, a physiotherapist. To find out more about us, check out our website, thepenisproject.org. I'm Melissa Hadley-Barrett, sexologist and nurse practitioner, specialising in men's intimate health. Join me as I break down the barriers surrounding men's health and have candid conversations about everything you've always wanted to know, but were too embarrassed to ask. This podcast is dedicated to stories from men who have bravely recognised the importance of sharing their experiences, breaking down stigmas, and having no filter chats about sexual health, cancer treatment and recovery, relationships, and everything else in between. If you know someone who you think would benefit from this information, please share so we can help more people. We would also love it if you'd follow the podcast and give us a review. Welcome to the Penis Project podcast. Today we have Jason Phillips. Jason got his prostate removed by robotic surgery in June 2023. And he was a very keen runner, which we're going to hear about before. And now he set himself this challenge for himself, but also to raise money for prostate cancer. So we want to talk to him today and hopefully get a bit of support for his plan. So welcome.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks heaps for coming in. So tell me what you're actually doing.
Okay, do you want to know about the challenge?
Yes, first of all, tell us about your prostate cancer journey.
Okay, so being a avid runner, one thing I've been doing over the years, probably the last 5 to 6 years, is doing a full blood screen, basically around my birthday because it's an easy date to remember.
Yeah, good idea.
So when I did that back in... what year are we now? 24, so 21. My GP at the time said it's probably a good idea to do a PSA test, which I hadn't done in the past, and that come back with a elevated reading. So I got referred from there, which was, 21. So got referred to the urologist. And then it was sort of ongoing monitoring for a 2-year period, basically.
So you would have only been 48 at the time.
Correct.
So have you got a family history? Is that why your GP suggested it?
My dad had prostate cancer when he was 72. Great. He's now 80.
Yeah.
And his levels, my level was 2.9. So when you look at the scale, like from 40 to 50, it was probably high in that scale.
Yeah, great.
But when you go 50 to 60... it's not high at all. So mine was 2.9 and my dad's was the same, but he was a lot older.
So that's a great thing that, like, your GP was obviously really switched on because he knew that even before 50, because you had a family history, you should start getting checked.
Correct.
So that's great.
And so we monitored it for the next 2 years and it sort of just went up and down, like a roller coaster. It'd go down a bit, it'd go back up, go down. But it didn't go down like into, you know, the low range sort of thing. So the urologist then decided to send me for an MRI. The first one come back sort of inconclusive. There was nothing there. So that was within the first year. And the second year he decided, well, we'll go for another MRI. And that one come back with some anomalies. Yep. So it didn't really pick up to say, yes, you got cancer. But there were some anomalies there in that reading. So that's what triggered the biopsy.
Okay. And then the biopsy showed that you had cancer.
Correct. Yeah. So that come back saying, yes, obviously cancer, and Gleason score is 7. So which is basically, when you look at the reading of 2.9, which wasn't extremely high, but the Gleason score was still 7. So... that's sort of one thing I wanted to sort of get out there. You know, everyone's in charge of their own destiny to a degree. And, you know, just because your PSA levels may not be high, if you've got any sort of doubts whatsoever, well, you know, either get a second opinion or chase it up further and get it checked.
Yeah, that's a really good, very good advice. So tell me, so you got that checked, and then how were you feeling about everything then? Were you thinking, like, nervous, or were you feeling all right?
Yeah, it was a weird situation. Like, you don't like being told you got cancer. It's a bit numbing, I suppose. But still, to be honest, right now sitting here, I don't know if I really have had time to fully sit back and just dwell on anything, because things are just sort of being go, go, go. And then I've had other things to occupy my mind as well, in a good way.
Yeah.
So I haven't had time just to sit around and sort of feel sorry for yourself, if you want to, say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I look as a positive, because, you know, you haven't worried about it. And having my dad and both his brothers actually go through this as well, you've got a family history and you've got support and you can reach out to them and, you know, find out what they went through, as opposed to you're on your own and you don't know what to expect. Mm. Yes, there's a lot of information out there and they give you everything, but, you know, it's not the same as having someone you know that's been there and done that.
Yeah, and told you how it was. And so you had your surgery 8 months ago now and you had a really good recovery. Like we were just talking before, you were continent within 2 weeks.
Yep.
Yep. And sexual function-wise, like you're on track, like you're recovering slowly but surely.
Yep, that's right.
Yep, so that's good. And then at what stage, well, first up, when did you start running originally? Because it wasn't something, you're 51 now and you didn't start until, what, 7 years ago?
It'll be 7 years in June.
And what was the motivator for starting to run?
Originally, to get fit and lose some weight. I was probably, give and take, 15 kilos heavier than what I am now.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, purely trying just to get fit again and shed some kilos.
Yeah. And were you ever a runner when you were younger, or what made you decide to run?
I was into sailing all my life, basically, because my whole family revolves around sailing, sailmakers, boat builders.
Yeah.
But as a young, like school age, I was little athletics, but a sprinter, never mm-hmm. long distance, because I couldn't breathe properly to sustain doing long distance.
Right.
So it's a bit.
Why is that, do you think? Did you have childhood asthma or?
No, it's just probably didn't put my mind to it, to be fair. And it's ironic now I look back at what I'm doing now compared to when I was younger, thinking, oh, yeah, you couldn't even run 2Ks or whatever. It's quite funny. But, yeah, so I was never into long distance at all.
Right, okay. And so then you thought, okay, I'm going to lose some weight, so I'm going to start running. And then it sounds like you just loved it, did you?
Yeah, there's a running club down at Rockinghead called Secret Rocky Runners. I joined them and I did a couple of runs with some people from that club. And the first year I started, I did my first ultra marathon, which was 47 Ks, basically 6 months after running. That was in December. I started in the June, which absolutely stupid idea. Because you haven't put the time and effort into training to sustain that. But in saying that, I finished that race. If I wouldn't have finished that race, maybe my story would be completely different. But because I finished that race, my mind then started ticking over, well, you know, what can you really do? How far can you push your body and how far can you go? So that was the carrot to continue on and keep doing it. And then I started training properly.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
So it became a little bit easier. But, that's sort of how it all started.
And did you feel like, was it the physical challenge or the mental challenge or both that attracted you to ultra marathons?
Exactly both. It's more mental, I would say, doing the ultra distance, but also physically. And it's the journey getting there. So all the training and the preparation and the race, if you're doing a race, is just the cherry on top sort of thing. That's the bonus.
Yeah, okay. And so how soon after your surgery did you get back into running? Like you would have had to have stopped for a while.
Yep. The urologist, who was Matt Brown, he said, look, most people take 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but you're not normal. So he said, we'll assess it, you know, as time goes by. He actually cleared me at the 10-week mark to start running.
Yeah.
But I decided to wait the extra 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I said, well, you know, he said 3 months for most people. I'm going to wait 3 months. So I started again in September.
Yeah.
And when I did start, I wasn't running, as in nonstop. I had to run / walk.
Right.
So it wasn't a matter of just start running where you left off, because I'd lost most of that fitness. So it was run, walk for probably 10 weeks.
That must have been so frustrating for someone who had been running.
Extremely lately. Frustrating. I can't describe how frustrating it was, but you knew that's part of the process. If you wanted to get back to where you were, that's what you had to do.
Yeah.
And then I went into a 12-week base plan, which is just trying to build your aerobic fitness back up. And I'm now into week 11 of a 16-week race plan to get myself ready for the challenge.
Right. Okay. And tell us exactly what the challenge is that you've set yourself.
Right. I'm going to run the Cape to Cape down in Margaret River in the southwest in WA. Reason I chose the Cape to Cape is I've always wanted to run that myself just as a personal challenge. There's a thing known as the fastest known time, and basically that's how quick you can run it. And I'm nowhere near as quick as some of the people that have done it in the past. However,
what is the quickest time anyone's ever run it?
A guy just did it, Shane Johnson, just prior to Christmas, and I'm pretty sure it was around the 15 and a half hour mark.
Wow, because I've walked that track and it's bloody hard yakka. Some of it is like deep, soft sand.
It is. And when you look at it on paper, like it's 125 Ks give and take, elevations a couple of thousand meters, but over the scheme of like some of the races we do, that elevation's quite low. But what people don't realize, exactly what you just said, the terrain. It looks relatively flat for a 125k distance, but that terrain, and it's the sand, and it's just not the beach section. Some of the single trails have the sand on it still.
Yeah, they do. And deep sand. Like you think, oh, thank God I'm off the beach. Then you get this nice bit of gravel and then you're back in the sandy bush when you're ankle deep in it again.
And I think that's part of the appeal. I could have picked probably the Bibbulmun track and done a section on that. But knowing this track, because I've done the Margaret River Ultra a couple of times, which is 80 kilometres predominantly along the Cape to Cape.
Yeah, okay.
So I've got a good idea what it's like. And yes, it's horrible, but it adds to the challenge.
It's also beautiful scenery and it's changing. Like we were talking before we started recording that, you know, like it can be really boring running or hiking or whatever. And so at least with that, you get some water, some bush, some, don't you? Like it's a bit changeable.
Yeah. Mm. So to go back to the question you asked, that's basically why I've chose that. I wanted to try and do it personally pre-surgery in, you know, 24 hours or under.
Mm-hmm.
Time's not really an issue at the moment. It's about completing the challenge because it's being done to raise money for Prostate Cancer Foundation and also awareness of prostate cancer. As we described earlier, like my levels weren't extremely high and I still had, you know, a Gleason score of 7. So it's to make people aware of that, you know, for one, get checked and two, just, you know, keep on top of things. And the other thing I want to try and get out there as well is, you know, if people put their mind to it, hopefully they can get back to, you know, doing what they were doing post-surgery, pre-surgery sort of thing. So
yeah, I think that's a really important point to make because I think it's very easy to go, oh, well, I've had cancer now or I've had major surgery or whatever and like I'm not going to be able to be what I was before. But there's a lot of people who can do exactly what they did before. They just need to be patient and do the work to get back there. So I think that's
exactly
really
right. And, you know, don't get me wrong, like I'm not running at the same paces and stuff like that as I was pre-surgery, but I'm not worried about that. You have a different outlook on things now anyway, but you're still doing what you love doing.
Mm.
So, you know, in that respect, that's a win anyway. So, yeah.
And when you say you've got a different outlook, do you feel like having had a cancer diagnosis and having treatment for that has made you look at things differently?
Oh, definitely, 100%.
In what way?
I suppose how short life can be and you need to make the most of it as opposed to, for example, sitting at home on weekends and, yeah, I'm out running or whatever and that's sort of all we did. Now I would love to get like a camper van type thing and travel away on weekends and probably park up near a trail somewhere and still go running, camp overnight, run the next day and then come home and see more of the countryside as well.
Yeah.
So it just gave me that probably perspective that we've all got, but it's buried in the back of your mind a bit, and it's just highlighted that for me that, you know, you got to enjoy every day you've got and make the most of it.
Yeah. And I think also it's really easy as we get older to go, oh, I can't do what I used to do and, you know, all of those things. But like there's just new things that you can always do. And, you know, you're a long time dead. So you might as well do something while you're alive. Yeah. That's great. And so what about your friends? Like have they like got behind you, and has you having this, going through this journey, made them think, geez, I better go and get my PSA checked?
That's one thing I haven't sort of held back with. As soon as I got diagnosed, I told, I won't say everyone, but a lot of people, and especially at work, I work in an open plan office. There's probably 300 odd people.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told most of the guys there, and even some of the females, to tell their partners or loved ones to get checked. And out of that, there has been a couple of people diagnosed. And people have come asking for advice as well because of my journey. So that, you know, even if you help one person, it's better than none, and just spreading that message to get that awareness to make people get checked.
Well, you think if roughly 20,000 men are diagnosed in Australia a year with prostate cancer, if every single one of them tells another person that gets a diagnosis, if they had it, you know, gets tested or tells 20 people and one of them's diagnosed, that's a lot of lives being saved.
Oh, exactly right. Like I did a talk just before Christmas at a trail running group up at Manning Park. And before I started getting into my story, I asked for a show of hands, and I asked the question, I said, who here knows what a PSA test is? And there was probably 50 people there. And a demographic from late teens up to like 70s to mid 70s,
mm-hmm.
and predominantly were in the older, like probably 40s above.
Yeah.
And out of the 50, there was 5 people.
Yeah, see, that's not many, is it?
And, no.
And, you know, just thinking of that, and I know I haven't said this on the podcast for a long time, but, you know, the PSA test, it's just a blood test now. So if you're listening and you think, I'm not getting that done because I don't want to finger up the bum, that is not the case. You just need a blood test.
And it's funny you say that, because when I then did state, you don't have to get, well, they call it what, digital exam now,
yeah,
I think it is.
I just think finger up the bum's the easiest.
I called it the evasive test, and everyone laughed. So yes, people knew what that was.
Yeah.
However, exactly what you've just said, I don't think they've all cottoned on to the fact that it's a simple blood test.
Mm. So, well, I think that's such a big thing, because I think often, you know, like if I'm at a barbecue or whatever and I meet new people and they ask me what I do and I say what I do, they'll go, oh, I haven't even been tested for that because I don't want anyone sticking their finger up my bum. And I'll be like, oh, you don't even have to do that anymore. Just have a blood test. And it's surprising how many people don't know that.
Correct. No, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
So,
and I think that is a real deterrent for a lot of men getting tested. And I think the other real deterrent for men getting tested is they think they're going to be incontinent and impotent for the rest of their life, and that just isn't the way it is anymore.
Yeah, and males in general are just hopeless. They don't like going to the doctor. So
yeah. Well, do you know that on average, a man who is partnered with a woman lives about 10 years longer than a single guy, and that's because the woman usually nags him to go to the doctor.
Yep, that'd be right. So,
obviously you were proactive, but you didn't have any symptoms either of prostate. I mean, most people don't have any symptoms at all. And so did you have any changes that you'd noticed?
Absolutely none whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, and like my dad still had it quite a few years before I was diagnosed. So, it's just one of those things, I suppose.
Yeah, that's great. Well, it sounds like you had an excellent GP. So obviously the aim of doing this, there's three. There's get the message out there. There's, you know, challenge yourself to do what you've always wanted to do and for a cause, which is great. And then also to raise money for Prostate Cancer Foundation Australia. So how, if people wanted to donate to this cause, how do they go about it?
Yeah, I've got an official page set up on the Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia. So everything's official. There's nothing
dodgy.
Dodgy at all.
You're not going to Paris after all this?
No, definitely not. But yeah, it's all official through the Prostate Cancer Foundation. So yeah, the link is on their page.
And I'll put the link in the show notes. So anyone who's listening, you just have to like go back to where you listen to your podcast and the link to donate will be in there. And if you're on my subscriber list, there'll also be a link to donate in the email that goes out next Saturday.
Excellent.
And then you've also got people, you've been putting your training and stuff up on your social media, haven't you? So we'll put your social media links in there as well.
Yeah, I've been doing, with the exception of last week, an update every week on the page as well. So you Great. Can post like updates and pictures and stuff like that. So there is updates there. I'll do another one this weekend because I'm going down to Margaret River to do the final recons of everything to make sure I've got everything checked yeah. off, so when we do start the challenge, there's no surprises.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this Sunday coming, it'll only be a month off, so it's closing in quite rapidly.
Yeah.
So I suppose.
So what's the actual date?
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't say the date. So I'm starting it on the 24th of April.
Okay.
And all going well, I'll be finished on the 25th, being Anzac Day.
Great.
Reason I chose Anzac Day, being a veteran,
mm-hmm.
so just had a personal meaning and, yeah, it just seemed like a good idea. So
I did – I was telling you before that I did Kokoda a few years back and I finished on Anzac Day. That was the day that we walked in at the end and it was amazing. They had the most amazing ceremony there. I did it because my dad was a Vietnam vet, so I wanted to do it finish
yeah.
in the jungle on that day, so it was awesome.
No, so that should be good. But, yeah, definitely looking forward to it. It's going to be a huge challenge. I haven't run that distance before. I haven't run through the night before. I have like what they call pacing, so assisting another runner during nighttime, but mm-hmm. not myself in any race or anything like that. So that's part of the excitement of it as well.
You're also going to have to be really careful that you don't trip. I mean, there's rocks and all sorts of things there. So you're going to have to be aware of that too.
Yeah, I've got a small support crew of three people, my wife mm-hmm. and two friends. They will jump in every now and then to do a 15K. I've sort of broken it up in 15K sections
right.
and they will jump in. And we sort of had a little meeting last night and I asked if, predominantly if they could jump in over the night sections would be
yeah.
probably preferable than during the day. Because mm. the end of the day, like you were saying earlier with the scenery and stuff like that, if you know things aren't going really good or you know, you're feeling sorry for yourself, all you got to do is look around and look out at the ocean, look at the scenery down there and you'll soon snap out of it. So,
and remember, you could have been dead if you didn't know about this.
Exactly right. So it'll be the night time that'll be the challenge, I think, getting through to the next morning. But, you know, that's why I'm doing it. If it was easy, well, everyone would do it. So
yeah,
it's a matter of challenging yourself, seeing what you can do and, yeah, make it work.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best of luck and I'm sure everyone listening does. And so please, anybody who's up to donate and wants there to be some money to go to Prostate Cancer Foundation Australia, and you only have to look at how amazing the outcomes are now to see all the amazing work that they're doing in getting treatment and people's quality of life better after prostate cancer. So please have a look at that and we'll look forward to seeing how you go, Phil.
Excellent. Thanks very much for having me, Melissa, and it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks. And I don't know why I just said Phil then instead of Jason.
That's
because
all right.
Phillips, Jason. That was really stupid. All right, great.
I'll answer anything. Doesn't matter.
Thanks so much. All righty. See you later.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. As a thank you for being a part of our podcast community, I have an exclusive subscriber offer for you. If you would like assistance with your sexual health and you'd like to work with me, then please head over to www.melissahadleybarrett.com/programs and use the code TPP5 at the checkout. Here you will find everything you need to know to be on the path to penile perfection. Thank you for listening to today's episode of The Penis Project. If you're enjoying this podcast, I would love it if you could leave a review and subscribe for regular updates. Your support plays a big role in spreading awareness and helping more men to access this information. The more followers we have, the more podcast platforms that recommend our show to others. This might be just the place where your friend, brother, neighbour with lingering questions finally discovers the answers. Stay connected with me on social media and join the Melissa Hadley Barrett email list for news about upcoming podcast episodes, blogs, and lots more. If you have a personal story that you'd like to share or you're a health professional working in this field, I would love to hear from you. If you'd like to be a guest on the podcast or a listener with specific topics you'd like us to cover, please send me an email at admin@melissahadleybarrett.com. Thanks again for being a part of the Penis Project podcast community, and until next time, take care.